Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
And we're back. Owl Post is freshly delivered for you this week. We're so excited to be here. I hope that you are just ready to feel magic and excitement. I am one of the hosts here, Wizard Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the stupendous, the wonderful, shares the same birthday with McGonagall, Drea Kaufman.
Hello! That is my crowning achievement, having been born 50 years after the fictional character.
I was about to say, and you had nothing to do with it.
It's still amazing.
Is it kind of all downhill from there? You didn't even have anything to do with it?
No, let's not go with that. I don't like that.
No, it's not. No,
it's
I don't
just starting
either.
Me
I
off on a great
uphill.
Foot. It just sets me up for success.
That's right. Yeah, well, and what it means is that you're set up for sheer awesomeness.
Yes, that magicalness is already instilled.
This magic moment.
Yes, exactly.
I was born. Yeah. Anyway, I don't need to finish that. We are excited to be here, and we are going to be talking about chapter 13 of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. The chapter is called Nicholas Flamel, but before we do that, we would love to hear what you have to say to us, and there are some great ways you can do that. You know what? Drea, I think one of the best ways they could do that is on iTunes.
Yes, please come leave us a review. Tell us what you think. Help other Harry Potter heads find this wonderful thing that we worked so hard to put out for you guys. Go to iTunes or go to the Nerd Party website and contact us and send us your thoughts that way. Either way is really great to hear. We do this for you guys. I'm not gonna lie, we do it a little bit so that we can read the books, and it's a little bit for us, but it's mostly for all of you. So, and anything you guys want to share, we're totally open to hearing it.
Exactly. So whether that's what you want to put in your review on iTunes, your star rating review there, let us know what you think. Help other people find the show in that way. Facebook.com/TheNerdParty is a great way to talk about the shows, especially in our show shares. We share the show there, and it's a great place underneath that show to comment about what you think after you listen. And you can find us on Twitter @JoinNerdParty. So all of those ways. And of course, I almost forgot, but you can go to TheNerdParty.com/contact, and you can choose the Owl Post. And that'll come to Drea and I if you have some thoughts or questions or something about anything that we've talked about, and you just maybe want to share it in an email format. That's wonderful. So, all of those places we'd love to hear from. I completely want to echo what you said, Drea. Yeah, we love doing this for you guys. We love the interaction we've already had with the fans, and we want to continue that. And so, yeah, let us know what you think, and keep sharing us everywhere on Facebook or Twitter too, to help other people find the show as well, whether it's on your Facebook page or, you know, just retweeting us or something. That really helps people find, as you said, Drea, other Potterheads. So
can we talk about Nicholas Flamel?
We can totally talk about Nicholas Flamel. I'm so excited to do that. And, I thought that it was a strange way to start the chapter. And I felt really bad for Harry at the beginning of this chapter, because he's started having nightmares about his parents disappearing into this flash of green light and this high-voiced laughter, just cackling as it happens. And I'm like, wow, that poor child.
This is something we come to just make almost synonymous with him growing up, is that this is a constant thing for him pretty much from now until the end of the series. So I forgot how early it started with him sort of being tortured, if you will, and how many years he has to sort of go through that, and how absolutely horrible that it must be. And it's just, you start off this chapter and you're already like, oh man, not already. Not are you starting to have to go through this already?
No. And it's just, and on top of that, you know, Ron's like, man, that mirror could have driven you mad. And then Hermione's back and she's all, I love how she is described. She's torn between the horror of the idea that Harry had been out of bed roaming the school three nights in a row. If Filch had caught you, you can just hear her. And then she was disappointed because he hadn't found out who Nicholas Flamel was. So she's like, she's not sure which way to go, you know? I just love seeing the dichotomy of Hermione here.
And I just can hear like the foot stomping along with it too. Like her getting so angry, yes, she's just like stomping her one foot while she's talking to him.
It's wonderful. But I'm glad that the Trinity is back together too. And it makes it a lot of fun. But it's also the chapter, and this is something that doesn't happen in the movie whatsoever, but this is the Quidditch match to which, if they win, they win the championship for school for that year. So it's a really big deal, but this isn't in the movie whatsoever. But it's really big for Harry, and he's really feeling the pressure as, you know, everybody, not only is everybody looking to him to catch the snitch quickly, but guess who's refereeing this
match? So I love the way, okay, so we always, in our society, we text. We're like, LOL, LMAO, you know, like, we're like, oh, ha, 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 right? You send the bah-ha-ha all in caps, right? Everything's funny, and everything is like, oh, I'm laughing out loud. And then you get this where it says, George Weasley really did fall off his broom at these words. Snape is refereeing. Like, the epitome of what those things actually mean, because he literally fell off of his broom. It caught me off guard, and I did actually laugh out loud at that one.
It's an interesting thing. Like, I didn't realize, and maybe it'll be something we, you know, see in other books, but it's strange to me to think that they have different referees instead of just having Madame Hooch always be the referee.
Yeah, and I don't know how someone didn't think that having the, like, captain or the head of that house that's playing, like, I don't know how that happened. I honestly don't know. Everything here seems relatively fair until you get to something like that.
Well, and the one moment of levity for Harry, and just this part of the chapter, because, you know, Harry's so worried about the Quidditch match, is after practice, Harry heads back to the common room and Ron and Hermione are playing chess. And I love the way that Harry thinks about this. He's like, chess was the only thing that Hermione ever lost at. Something Harry and Ron thought was a very good idea for her.
When they're just being a little bit spiteful, but they're actually doing her a great service. Like, teaching someone how to fail gracefully and learn from it is a huge life skill. You know, there's just a part of them that's doing it just a little vindictively because they just need to bring her down a peg.
Well, and what is wonderful about it is that it seems like it's something that Harry and Ron have talked about, but they don't ever seem to rub it in her face, you know? And I think you're absolutely right. There's probably a part of them that they've talked about it when she's not around. Man, it was so great to beat, you know, Hermione at chess the other day. I know, because every time I ask her a question about our homework, I'm wrong. So, you know, but they aren't mean about it to her face, you know, like and I think that's, I don't know, it's one of those things that kind of shows the boy's character, you know, that they can realize that it is probably good for their friend to not be good at everything, but they don't like, they don't go about it in the same way that like a Malfoy would, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you don't face that, I know, Drea, because you're good at everything. So, I mean, I'm just speaking about myself, but you don't know what that's like. So.
No, I absolutely know what that's like.
Well, and this is what's so wonderful about this chapter. There's all of these things that don't happen in the movie and that really help towards the end of the book and the movie, and Neville comes in and he's had his, you know, legs bound together, and so he's been hopping all the way back to the common room.
Speaking of legs, I like that Hermione's like, pretend to break your leg, and Ron is like, really break your leg. Really? Like, mm-hmm, I love that. Mm-hmm. He goes to break your leg for real. It just
Yeah.
My God.
I mean, we could just grow it back. Yeah. I mean, Madame Pomfrey can just grow that back. It'll be fine.
And then Neville topples into the room.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and I love what happens with them because, you know, they all kind of come around Neville and they're like, you need to stand up to Malfoy. Otherwise, he's not only going to walk all over you, he's going to continue to walk over everybody else. And, you know, Neville's like, look, I already feel bad enough. You know, I mean, he already made fun of me for being in Gryffindor, even though I'm not brave. And what Harry does, like, Harry's my hero for kindness. You know, like, it's just so out of left field because we haven't had a lot of Neville to this point. But what Harry does is just above and beyond sweet. You know, it's incredible.
Well, and I love, like, his just instinct. You can tell it's not forced or fake or anything like that. But he just, you know, instantly went back to what he was told and what comforted him when he was worried about going to the wrong house. And it's like, the sorting hat chose that for you. And like, that you are in the right place. And, like, I'll take you any day over him. Like, it was just so sweet. And he gives him the chocolate frog, which turns out to be a key point here. But, you know, he took the last chocolate frog and gave it to him. Like, how many kids at 10 would or 11 would be like, oh, but it's my last chocolate. I have to keep it. Like, no, he didn't even think twice. He was just like, here you go. This is going to make you feel better.
Exactly. And what he says, like, you is just phenomenal. You know, look, you're in Gryffindor. Where's Malfoy? You know, like, he's in Slytherin. So the Sorting Hat knew what it was doing. And I love that, you know, he gives him the chocolate frog and Neville is like, you know, kind of like smiling a little bit, you know, and he's just like, I'm going to bed. And he gives him the card. And that's where everything comes together because Harry reads the back of it because it's Dumbledore. And he's like, Nicholas Flamel. And it all just snowballs from there, but they finally know who Nicholas Flamel is and what he's famous for and why they haven't been able to find him in the recent history of wizards.
Well, they found out who Nicholas Flamel was and gave like a category to sort of look for. And then that sparks Hermione to pull out her super wizardy book like she does in the movie out of nowhere, which I think they got that part in the movie pretty right. The giant book and the that mm-hmm. I pretty much envisioned that way. And then her finding it. And I like how they're like, oh, well, that's why they can't we can't find him in any recent textbooks because he's 665 years mm-hmm. old. Like, of course we can't find him.
Well, and I also like that they haven't quite beat the snarkiness out of Hermione because she's like, he's the only known maker of the Philosopher's Stone. This didn't quite have the effect that she expected. Of what? Asked Harry and Ron. Oh, honestly, don't you two read? Like, I just love that because I'm kind of picturing her having the same kind of countenance that Malfoy does in the second movie. He's like, I didn't know you could read. Like, she's just has that same kind of mean snarkiness. Don't you two read?
It's that moment where I do that to my husband. I'll like pull something up on my phone and I'll give it to him. I'll be like, look, it's about Harry Potter or something. He'll be like, okay, well, what's it about? I'm like, it's right in front of you. Just read it.
Yes. No, it's, I think anybody who has a close relationship with somebody, you just have these moments and it is pretty funny. And this is where they realize, you know, when they read about the Philosopher's Stone and what it can do and, you know, the fact that Nicholas Flamel is very, very old. He's 665 years old and his wife is 658. Yes, these people are very old. And they realize that's what Fluffy is guarding. It has to be the stone. And so, I love how out of almost, it seems like thin air, she pulls us back in to the mystery as, you know, we're still kind of, you know, this chapter has so many different things, but the way she does it, I think is just kind of brilliant. She just drops this knowledge on you.
Well, they don't talk about it in the movie at all, but it not only gives you the elixir of life, but it also like turns stuff to gold, which is not brought up in the movie at all. It's just, it's the stone of life. So I thought that was interesting. And I like how there's this giant paragraph you read and then Harry sums it up in like 8 words. Oh, it turns things to gold and makes you live forever. Got it. Thank you. Didn't have to read it all.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because, you know, we had the first Quidditch game and it was all about what was really happening on the pitch. And I like how this Quidditch game, the match is happening in the background, but Ron and Malfoy's fight is really what we are focused on. Like, the game is in the background, but the confrontation between Ron and Malfoy, and I love that Ron just kind of finally snaps. Like, he has just had enough of this bully, you know? And it's like somebody who's his own age, and so he, you know, it's not like one of his older brothers where he's smaller. He's going to take this mother down.
Well, and I like how, like, Neville joins in on the fight, too. I mean, because he's really picking on Neville, too. And when we learn more about him later on, you really understand the impact this sort of, like, insults really have on him. That Malfoy probably has no idea what he's actually saying and how hurtful he's actually saying, right? And I like how he, like, hesitates for a second. And then they say, like, then clambered over the back of his seat to help out, too. Like, I loved it.
No, it's phenomenal. And... Well, like I said, what's so interesting is the game is kind of in the background, and yet it's so wonderful because they win, you know, like Harry and Gryffindor, they win and they're champions, but it's not something that really gets celebrated because the moment that the game is over, Harry, as he's kind of coming back from the Quidditch pitch, he sees this hooded figure coming down from the castle and going into the Forbidden Forest. He realizes it's Snape. And so he follows him, and Snape is having a very secret meeting with a very scared Professor Quirrell, which doesn't happen in the movie at all like this.
No.
And it makes Snape so much more sinister.
Yeah, and so much shadier. And really paints Quirrell as this, like, almost victim in this case, and this, like, being bullied. You almost feel like he's the Harry to you know, Snape's mm-hmm. Malfoy. But, you know, we'll come to talk more about that in a couple chapters. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, and how he can't, Harry never really gets a chance to, like, enjoy his victory of the House Cup, which should be a huge accomplishment because he's so wrapped up in this. Like, he never really has time to be like, yeah, I won. I mean, he got out on the pitch, won the game within 5 minutes because he just did not want to be around Snape any longer than that. Something to say about as pressure being a motivation, right? He just wanted to be out of there, so he just did it and got out of there. So I just thought it was so interesting, and it is so much more over, like, hitting you over the head right in your face as to why you feel like Snape is totally the bad guy in the rest of this book, or the rest of the series.
Well, and one of the things that's so fascinating about what she's doing is she's really playing with perception, because what Harry's perceiving to happen, but what's actually happened, are two different things. And we'll find that out, obviously, at the end of the book. But really, it is kind of that, it's almost like that Star Wars thing where Obi-Wan Kenobi tells Luke, you know, don't trust your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them, you know, and that's exactly what's happening. He doesn't have all the information. And so because he only has a piece of the puzzle and not the whole puzzle to put together, he's not putting things together correctly. And so, but she's also doing such a masterful job of doing the same thing to the reader, where she's leading you to the conclusion she wants you to have at this point, that Snape is just awful. And you have every reason to believe it, because from Harry's perspective, the person that you're most close to in this book, along with Ron and Hermione, he's awful.
He's just being awful.
You know, and yes, exactly. And I think that's it's a really good job of writing for her, because I don't know about you, but I do remember reading this for the first time, and I never, ever thought that Snape wasn't the bad dude. You know, like, it just never really occurred to me that Snape wasn't the bad guy.
Yes. And
she got me.
She got you. I feel like, so a lot of TV dramas and just that kind of writing and entertainment, I always feel like a lot of that is just drawn on a character not having all of the story, right? Because if you had all the pieces, mm-hmm. then everything would make more sense. Like secrets are what always cause all the drama and all the mystery and stuff. And so I kind of feel like throughout the series, we sort of get this like lack of communication relationship where if someone had just told Harry what was going on kind of as we go, then probably none of this would have happened. Like if Dumbledore had just told him from the beginning that they were picking up the Sorcerer's Stone and it was being locked away so Voldemort doesn't get it because he's sure Voldemort's back, then like he probably would have never thought it was Snape, or Snape would have made a lot more sense, or they wouldn't have spent the entire school year trying to find out who Nicholas Flamel was, you know? I just think it's so funny that, and it's kind of one of those life lessons, right? Like if you want to avoid miscommunications, just tell everyone everything. Just be honest here.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And but I also think that there's an interesting aspect that Harry being able to, and this Trinity having to learn to put pieces together for themselves, it's going to be something that's going to be huge. It's going to be big at the end of the
series. It's a great skill. And in this particular book, I don't think it's really too detrimental because it's really nothing they should have to know about.
Right.
Like, this is really none of their business. They really don't need to be concerning themselves with any of this, right? None of this really affects them immediately. And they almost make it worse by getting involved. But as we go through the series, that becomes less and less the case. And it becomes more and more, if you had just told him, maybe we could have made this a lot easier on everybody. But in this, it's really amazing how much it kind of goes back to that point from a few weeks ago about people assuming that kids aren't paying attention and can't put it together. And, you know, it's like we spell things around kids, you know, we'll be like, it's, you know, you have a big B-U-T-T, you know, we think they don't know what that means, but at some point they really do figure it out. So, I think it was great that we figured out who Nicholas Flamel is, and I really liked Malfoy getting punched in the face. Thank you, Rowling, for that.
Well, and you know, again, I think that's one of those things where this is something that completely gets cut out of the movie, but it's kind of a hero moment for Ron.
Yes. And Neville.
And it gets taken away from him. Yeah, and Neville. And it's taken away from those characters. And again, this whole chapter really builds towards the end of the book on all these things that are going to be important. And so I really like that. And I love the way that the chapter ends, as I often do, where they're talking about how Quirrell is the only one who's keeping the stone safe. And Ron says, it'll be gone next Tuesday.
Yeah, right. Lack of faith there.
Just love it. I absolutely love it. So it's a shorter chapter in the book, but there's actually some really important things that happen in it. And it's one of those things. It's an important expositional chapter where a lot of pieces for the story get put in that really drive the rest of what's going to happen in the book. And it's super exciting. I can't not wait to continue on now. I mean, this is chapter 13. There are 17 chapters in this book, which means we have 4 left. That's super exciting now. And we'll be done with book one. Can you believe it, Drea? We're almost done.
I can't believe we're so close to being done with book one. It feels like we just started this yesterday.
Yeah, it does. Well, if people would like to talk to you more about some Harry Potter or anything else, where can they do that online?
Sure. If you want to come chat with me about Neville's bravery and chocolate frogs, you can find me on Twitter at PCFChick, or I'm on Instagram. You can find pictures of all the amazing, lovely things that I eat, because that's what you do on Instagram. I'm at Drea Kaufman, and it's C-O-F-F-M-A-N. And usually I'm chatting with Matthew because he is also on Twitter.
Yes, I am. You can find me at MattRushing02 talking away with Drea about things, or you can find me on Instagram doing pictures of all sorts of stuff at MRushing. I am on the Trek FM network doing The Orb with Chris Jones, and that's all about Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, that is. I'm also doing the General Geek Show, which is a blast. It's called the 602 Club. I hope you will check it out. We just enjoy talking about all the fandoms we love. Drea has been there before talking about Harry Potter movies, but we've talked about all sorts of other things like Star Wars or, you know, just some really old classic films or new favorites. I mean, just all sorts of stuff. So it's a blast. So just be sure to find both of those on iTunes. And then here on the network, I am doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, and we talk all about Star Wars. And it's just, you know, a lot of times it'll just be whatever has been in our heads about Star Wars that week. And it's a lot of fun. So I hope that you will check that out. You won't regret it. Again, you can find all of those on iTunes, where you can also give us a star rating and review to help other Harry Potter fans find the show. Well, thank you so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the nerd party.
Not him. Choose him. He's expendable. He's got those little gangly arms. You don't need him. He's not a knight.
That should be a special clip cut out. That'd be my new ringtone.
I can make it for you. So... He got the little gangly arms. Oh, it's so funny. Oh, gosh. Why is that so funny? Anyway, okay.